I don't like to put a lot of pressure on myself because then it's, I don't know, then it becomes unfun, you know, and no one wants that. Running should be fun.
Diz Runs Radio, episode 632 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick, before we dive into today's episode, just want to thank Knucklelights for supporting today's episode of the show. They are today's official sponsor, and you've heard me talk about Knucklelights before, how much I love the fact that you know, I can have these lights on my hands, but still have my hands to hold on to something. So whether it's hold on to a water bottle, in my case, more often than not, it's hold on to a dog leash. It still gives you full use of your hands while still giving you all the light you need to see where you're going, to make sure that you're safe, and arguably most importantly, make sure that the cars can see you as well, because you know, don't want to get take a turn for the grim here, but when it comes to car runner collisions, the car is still to this day undefeated champion. So if you can avoid running into a car, or more likely having a car run into you during your run, that's a good thing. And when people are driving, especially if it's at a time when they don't think that people are going to be out running, the last thing that they're looking for is a runner, as a pedestrian, somebody on the road, and having a light like a knuckle light is a great way to alert the driver that, hey, something's going on up there. They get to pay a little bit more attention to go, oh, shoot, there's somebody running. Let me make sure to give them plenty of space. So Knucklelights, great for your safety and able to see what's going on. Make sure you don't step on a root or a pothole or something like that and fall and hurt yourself. But also very useful to make sure that you're seen by cars and able to make it home safely during your runs. And, you know, not for nothing, but at least here in the Northern Hemisphere, the days are getting shorter, the nights are getting longer. So more and more runs are happening during the dark, whether that's early morning into the evening. So make sure you've got some good lights to help you stay safe, help you see and be seen, I think is Knucklelights' tagline. And it really is an important thing to do to make sure you're staying safe as you're running and training any time of year, but especially this time of year when the nights are getting longer and it's dark more and more often when we're out there pounding the streets, on the trails, whatever the case might be. So if you haven't got yourself a pair of Knucklelights yet, and if you can't tell, I'm a fan of mine, head over to Knucklelights.com, order yourself a pair. Make sure you let them know about it here on Diz Runs Radio. And now, without any further ado, let's go ahead and dive in to today's episode of the show. Hey guys, my guest today is a running coach, blogger, obviously a runner as well, and all around just healthy lifestyle, healthy living type of person, an advocate, and a fan of being healthy in all ways. She strives to inspire those around her to live healthier as well, and she also, most importantly, strives to set that example for her kids to be healthy and active and just, you know, taking care of themselves on every phase. And without any further ado, I'm really looking forward to getting to know her a bit better over the next few miles. So here it is. It's time to introduce Miss Rachel Fruitkin to the show. Thanks for joining us today, Rachel. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And guys, if you you may have bumped into Rachel, I didn't realize, but I probably have a half a dozen times, various social medias and blog posts and things like that. So you might be more familiar with her than you realize. But runningonhappy.com is the website, and Facebook it's just Running On Happy, and on Instagram and Twitter it's slightly more complicated, but not too difficult. It's at @running_unhappy. Again, that's Instagram and Twitter with the underscore @running_unhappy. And as per usual, we'll have everything linked up in the show notes. So if you're out on the go, can't write something down, or can't log in to connect right now, all you got to do is head over to dizruns.com/632. That'll take you right to the show notes. And like I said, we'll have everything linked up, the brief write-up, the summary of the conversation, all those things, dizruns.com/632. So, Rachel, the way we always start off each episode of the show is with a very simple question that for some folks, it's a pretty darn easy one to answer. And for some others, it really is kind of difficult to have to narrow it down and pick just one. But it's just to simply ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
So before yesterday, I had a really simple answer. And my simple answer is the 5K, because I really like running fast. It's short and sweet. You know, you get on with your day. It's a fun distance. But then I started thinking that I really like marathons. And I don't really like running them fast because I'm not a fast marathoner, but I enjoy the challenge of the training and then the final race day. So that's my more complicated answer.
That's quite the dichotomy between those two distances.
Right?
I feel like it's usually, you know, every once in a while we get somebody that is a pretty good fan of the 5K, like yourself. But there's not a whole lot of love lost for the marathon, or vice versa, where it's the longer distance stuff, and it's like, oh my gosh, 5K, like that's
right,
you know, so hard and so fast, and yes, it's short, but God, goodness gracious, like it just hurts from the beginning to the end.
But it's so fun.
I don't know if I lean more on the long distance side of the things here, but I'll take you at your word that you enjoy it at least. I may not enjoy it that much, but what do you enjoy? Like you say, it's so fun. What for you is so fun about the 5K? Whereas for me, all I can think about is just how miserable it is for the you know, somewhere around 20 minutes, 21 minutes, something like that. It's just miserable for me. What is it fun for you?
I mean, it is kind of miserable. It's hard to make yourself run fast for that long. It's not like a 100-meter dash where it's, you know, you're in and out and you're done. But I don't know. I like being able to see what I can sustain for, you know, 3.1 miles and see if I can push it a little further. You know, I like being uncomfortable for that amount of time. Whereas for me with like the marathon, it's more, I guess it's more of a mental journey in the marathon because, you know, I don't run super fast in marathons. I enjoy the sights and the sounds and, you know, I kind of la-di-da, I listen to podcasts, but with the 5K, you know, you got to mentally focus and you're dialed in the whole time. Mm-hmm. So I like that challenge.
Yeah. And it's funny you say it kind of like that, or at least the way I hear what you're saying, with that being able to be locked in and focused mentally, because I've said several times, it's no secret to anybody who's listened to the show, that I feel like, especially in the marathon, the mental thing is a big part of what's holding me back from reaching whatever my ultimate potential could be. And that, you know, I've reluctant to admit, but I've been guilty of giving up, quitting on myself, you know, letting myself walk for just a second at mile 19 or 21 or whatever. And then once you do that, or at least for me, once I do that, it's all over.
Oh, totally.
You know,
totally.
Versus,
I agree with that.
You know, and as much as I dislike the 5K, like if I'm committing to a 5K, I can lock in for that 3.1 miles and go.
Right.
So I guess where I'm leading with this, or what I'm wondering maybe is, How do you bridge that gap? And you may not know the answer. Maybe we just need to talk this through a little bit, or maybe there isn't a great answer, but bridging that gap from being able to lock in for 3.1 miles versus, you know, helping to be more mentally strong, mentally focused in the later stages of a marathon or a half marathon or whatever your long distance race is, where maybe that starts to become a struggle.
Like I said,
I don't know if this is a great answer or a great question, other than, you know, how can anybody help to bridge that gap and maybe try to get a little bit stronger mentally in the later stages of those long races?
Well, I think it depends. I think it depends on your goals, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're a fast marathoner, for example, like my best marathon was 4:44. So I am not a fast marathoner. Mm-hmm. And that was a struggle. So if you're a fast marathoner and your body can withstand the pace and the distance, I feel like it's maybe a little easier to mentally dial in like it would be for me with the 5K. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're slower and you're walking through the aid stations and you're kind of lollygagging around like I do, it's less of a mental challenge because, you know, I don't have that same goal as a faster marathoner does. So, I don't know. It's tough. It's really tough.
Right.
From a coaching standpoint, to get people, especially marathoners, to mentally dial in. So I feel like you start as an athlete, you either have it or you don't. And then if you don't have it, you have to train yourself. You know, you got to start with the smaller distances and then kind of graduate, I guess, to the marathon.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. If you start walking, sometimes you're like, okay, well, I guess that's it.
Right. And it's a ridiculous, speaking for my own self, it's a ridiculous thought, because I've known, you know, like there's nothing wrong with a short walk here and there. It can give your muscles a little break, give your mind a little bit of a break. But right. for me, it just ends up being like, that was me throwing in the towel. Like I let myself right. walk for no good reason. I didn't need to. Right. And you know, then it's just like, well, I'm now 20 seconds off of goal pace. Well, the hell with it. Like never mind right. the fact that I could maybe make that up, or at least not fall any farther behind the goal pace and still finish pretty darn well. Like, oh, it's just such a, obviously right. something like, that maybe oh. I beat myself up with a bit too much after the fact sometimes.
All right, there goes my whole race because mm-hmm. I walked for 20 seconds.
Right, right. Yeah, it's ludicrous. But in the moment, that's where I am.
Yeah, but you got to – I think in that situation, you got to break the race down into, mm-hmm. you know, more manageable chunks. So, like, if you have to walk at mile 19, well, you know what? I only have the 7 miles left.
Right.
I can do that. That's an easy training run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you got to kind of think of it like that. Like, oh, I just did 19 miles. I'm fine. I'm going to keep mm-hmm. going. So I walked for 20 seconds.
No big deal. Yeah, exactly. And that's one of those things I think maybe you learn a little bit with experience and also yeah. helps to have a little bit of an outside perspective, so to where having a coach can help. And definitely want to get into some of the coaching stuff a bit more as we go. But first, I would love to kind of shift the focus back to what is your running history like, Rachel? Is it something that have you always been involved in the sport, or did you come to it a little bit more recently, or how did you get involved in this sport?
Kind of a little bit of both. So when I was a kid, I have two older brothers. One is 8 years older than me and the other one is 4.5 years older. And they were both very athletic. They did track, cross country, basketball, baseball, like all that stuff. And so of course, being the little sister, I wanted to be like my brothers. And so seventh grade, I went out for cross country and track, and it was kind of terrible. I was really, really slow. I was always the last one in cross country meets to cross the finish line. It was super embarrassing. So I did not continue with cross country, and I did continue with track. I think I quit that in ninth grade, because also that's when everyone got faster than me. Mm-hmm. So, I didn't really do a whole lot in high school. I actually found better things to do, like hanging out with my friends and doing a whole bunch of nothing. So
right.
That took a back seat until I got pregnant with my son and I started walking, because I had read a whole bunch of stuff about how walking and movement and running can help babies sleep when they're born.
Mm.
So I took up walking, and then after my son was born, I had a hard time losing weight. And so I decided that I was going to start running. And the way I started running is back in seventh grade, when I was doing my whole cross country, terrible joke, career, whatever you want to call it, my dad had suffered a minor heart attack, and his rehab was to do basically the couch to 5K method. And so I saw what my dad had done, and he ended up, you know, run walking for 4 miles. That was like his goal, and he did really well with it. And so after I had my son and I was trying to lose weight, I basically picked up his, you know, heart rehab protocol, which was basically the couch to 5K, which I didn't realize at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I started doing that. And then one day I was like, hey, I'm going to see if I can run for 6 miles straight without walking. And I did it. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I guess I can run 6 miles now. And then it took off from there. So I've been running consistently for 9 years. So that's my running story.
Gotcha. Yeah.
It's
always interesting to hear those stories, whether it's folks that, you know, have been running forever since, you know, basically since they could walk, they were running, and all through competitive and high school and maybe college as well, and just never really stopped, versus the starters and the stoppers, kind of like what you did there, and then the folks that get to it a bit later. But it's always neat to have the to be able to look back and be like, gosh, like it's been 9 years, it's been 12 years, it's been seven years, and you know, when you started, I'm going to imagine that you probably never would have in your wildest dreams thought you'd be where you are today. But you know, it just starts with that little couch to 5K and you'd keep taking it one day at a time. And who knows where the future leads.
I mean, it took me, let's see. So I started running in 2009. Yeah. So I started running in 2009 and it took me until 2014 to do any like distance. I did a 10 miler that year. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing half marathons. So it took me a while to go from, you know, the couch to 5K to any sort of distance.
Yeah. And you know, it's just that consistency and sticking with it. We're at that point in those early days, of running and not going as far, at least as far as races were concerned, what was the motivation that kept you going? Because for a lot of folks, and this may or may not be you, but for a lot of folks, like, those races kind of are that motivating piece, whether it's a 5K or whether it's a half marathon or whatever it is. Were you doing smaller races and that kept you going, or what was kind of your drive in those early days?
I mean, it took me a while to do races. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I really liked it. It was fun.
Gotcha.
Well, like, I liked the challenge of it, I guess.
Yeah.
That's always my thing. I like the challenge of it.
that's fair. And as long as you're having fun and enjoying yourself,
yeah,
you know, that's certainly the name of the game. So starting off, having fun, enjoying it, you know, not really putting any quote unquote pressure on yourself with races. Has that changed over the years to, you know, and maybe more recently, is that the predominant thing and the races are just the icing on the cake, or have you shifted a bit more to enjoying getting out there and again, whether it's short or long, pushing yourself in the race environment?
So both, I guess. I will pick usually once a year, maybe twice. That's rare though. I'll pick like a goal race to really focus on, to like, you know, either try for a PR or a new distance or something. But the other races that I do sign up for, I do to pepper into my training. And those are just more fun runs. You know, I keep the pressure off. I know a lot of people do have trouble not racing in the race environment, but I'm actually pretty good at that. You know, if I have a half marathon as a training run, I don't go into it like, oh my God, it's a half marathon. I go in as, oh yeah, it's a supported long run.
Right.
You know? So like, I keep it real chill and I like to have fun. I don't like to put a lot of pressure on myself because then then it becomes unfun, you know, mm-hmm. and no one wants that. Running should be fun.
Yes. I completely agree. When did coaching come onto your radar?
So coaching, I got RRC certified in 2015 and, I don't know why I wanted to be a coach. I think because I had such awesome coaches. Granted, I didn't run that long in like middle school and high school, but the coaches I did have were really awesome and I loved them and they were just super inspiring. And when I was training for my first marathon, which was the Cleveland Marathon in 2015, I decided that I wanted to help people achieve their goals. So I went for it.
And how has that process been? I don't know, maybe overall, I mean, obviously I'm going to assume you still enjoy it. It's still rewarding for you, otherwise probably wouldn't keep doing it. But, you know, how has maybe the coaching side of things helped or changed or shifted your take on your own running?
That's actually a really interesting question because I cannot coach myself. So I'll have, you know, a half marathoner and I have a perfect plan for them and I know exactly what they need to do, what kind of runner they are, the workouts that will work best for them. But when I look at my own training, so I also have a coach, but so when I look at my own training and I try to apply what I'm doing with other runners to myself, I freak out. So I send my coach these emails and I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing today. My leg hurts. I can't do my long run. Can you help me? So like, I have all these answers for my runners, but when it comes to myself, it doesn't help me at all. Like I'm totally confused. I have no idea what to do. If my foot hurts, I'm like, do I run? Do I not run? I don't know. it's such a weird like dichotomy to not be able to figure out what I should be doing.
What do you think causes that? Or what's probably not anything logical,
know.
But what's the rationale there?
I really don't know. I guess I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. I know my coach has a coach, and a lot of his runners are coaches themselves also. So it's an interesting profession, I guess, where everybody kind of gets advice from other coaches. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is. And it's one of those, at least from my perspective, I think it helps to have that outside voice or that outside opinion, because, you know, as if I'm reading between the lines here, you know, when it's one of your athletes, like, you can be that voice of reason. You're not living it every second of every day, whether it's that little ache and pain or that little bit of unsureness if you're really ready or whatever it is, you know, the fire that you're putting out as a coach that day, versus when it's yourself. Then, you know, it's all encompassing, and it's all you think about, and like every little step, like, oh, is this going to cause this little twinge that's probably nothing, but, you know, having somebody else to bounce it off of can be quite helpful.
Yeah, totally.
Good deal. Along the coaching lines, so just to back up a second there, so we're all on the same page, you know, I coach as well. And it's one of the things I love about having other coaches on the show is kind of what you were just saying about, you know, coaches working with other coaches and things like that, because I also think it helps to just hear kind of some things that other people do or other different thoughts, and kind of get out of your own bubble and see things from maybe some different perspectives that then you can use to help with, you know, the athletes you work with or yourself or whatever the case might be. And so whenever I talk with other coaches, I always love to kind of just pick their brains a bit for a little bit of selfish, like, you know, those reasons I just mentioned. But also for the people that are listening that for whatever reason, you know, they don't have room in the budget for a coach, or they don't think that they're ready for a coach or whatever. They've had bad experiences with a coach before, and they're just going to try to do it themselves for now. So to try to help those folks a bit as well as much as possible. So, you know, and I know I didn't really mention this in the beginning, but you're also a personal trainer as well. So you've got that nice blend, which I think is important to have the kind of the strength and healthy living side of things, along with the running specific side of things. So, you know, start maybe wide open, and then, you know, depending on how things go, we can narrow this down a little bit. But, you know, when it comes to maybe your number one or piece of advice or most important thing that seems to, you know, all of your athletes need to be hear this and reminded of this or whatever it might be. But what's one big thing that, you know, if you could say, you know, wave your magic wand and solve this one problem, it would make a world of difference to runners of all ages and ability levels. What kind of thing would you start out with on that front?
Oh my God, that is like the most loaded question ever, right?
I know.
At first, I would tell any client, prospective or current, that you can do hard things, right? Mm. So like, people come to coaches for a variety of reasons, usually because they want to tackle a new distance or get a PR or something like that. And they're unsure of where to start. And you got to start with knowing that you can do hard things. You know, I don't baby my clients. They're adults, mm-hmm. Well, most of them. I've got a lot of kid clients too, but I don't baby, you know, I tell you the workout, this is what you have to do, and this is why you do it. And that's going to get you to achieve your goal. The people that I do have to kind of like crack the whip are the ones that either don't do their workouts, don't provide me any feedback, or complain, which is, it's rare. But I do, you know, some of my Couch to 5K runners complain,
right?
But I'm like, hey, you got to do it. You can do hard things.
Right.
So I guess that's, you know, the number one thing that I blanket to almost everybody.
Yeah, and that's a good one to remind, and especially when you're looking towards a new goal, because if you're just trying to stay where you are, you know, as far as not, you know, I don't mean it quite this way, but if you're not trying to grow and push your limits, then you don't have to do the hard things very often. But if your goals and ambitions are bigger, then you know what,
running is still hard.
Right, that's true. Right? That's very true.
So you can do hard things even if you're not trying to bite off a big goal.
Right. Yeah, that's a very valid point. So I want to get back to a little bit more of some of that coaching stuff in just a second. But first, just want to take a second and pay a couple of bills and thank the good folks from Knucklelights for continuing to support the show and sponsor the show. I've talked before about how much I love the Knucklelights and how they just slip around your hands, and you still have your hands to use. It's not like you have to hold a flashlight. You know, it's not something like that. They slip around the outside part of your hands. The lights are very bright. You definitely have no problem seeing things. And if you're like me and not the biggest fan of wearing a headlamp, it's a great alternative to, like I said, still have your hands free. But one question I've gotten, and actually, quite honestly, one of the concerns I had in the early days of using the Knucklelights was, what if you're doing a longer race? You know, what if you're doing an overnight something, a long ultra, you know, and the Knucklelights, like, are they gonna, what's the battery life like, things like that? And the first pair of Knucklelights that I had were rechargeable, which was great for the shorter things, but you know, if you're overnight on a trail and the lights start to go out, you're kind of not in such a good situation at that point. And fairly recently ish in the last 8 or 10 months, something like that, there's a new you know, option in the Knucklelights, ones that have batteries. So there you go, problem solved. So whether you prefer the rechargeable batteries like I do, or whether you're out on the go and you need hours and hours of lights, or, you know, maybe just use them as your emergency light, which I definitely do. You know, when a hurricane's approaching, we make sure the Knucklelights are all charged up and ready to go. But there's battery options available as well. So if you want to check out the different options that are available, and definitely highly recommended for me, not just because they're a sponsor of the show, but I mean, shoot, I've been recognizing them and promoting them and talking about them when they're sponsoring and when they're not. So check out knucklelights.com for more information. Get yourself a pair. And, you know, with the holidays coming around, it could be a great great little something to add to your Christmas list as well if you don't have a pair already. So knucklelights.com, thank you for the continued support. So Rachel, you know, you can do hard things. I think that's like I said, it's a good bit of advice, a good reminder, and maybe, you know, kind of like I, you know, tying it back to me, which I don't ever really try to do, but, you know, talking about the struggle in the marathon, mile 19, 21, whatever it is, and you know, like, oh God, this is so hard, let me just stop to walk. You know, maybe having that, maybe the next time I'm in a race like that,
yeah,
and have your voice in the back of my head.
You can do hard things.
I can do hard things. Exactly. How do you, you know, yes, we can do hard things. And yes, you know, like you said, anything physical, there is difficulty to it. But I also think, kind of tying back to the early part of our conversation, that, you know, that confidence and that trust in the ability to do hard things, kind of, you know, proving some of the mental side of things as well, is something that is tough to go from zero to 60 with. You kind of have to build that resilience, that confidence that yes, I can do this, that yes, my body's capable, that yes, I'm not going to fall apart, I'm not going to hurt myself, I'm not going to die, anything like that. So when you've got, whether it's a new runner or somebody that's been running for years, and they come to you to help you, help them get over the hurdle and get onto their next goal or whatever it is, how do you build that willingness to do hard things, maybe is the best way to ask it, because, you know, it's hard, it's not fun, it hurts. How do you ramp that up to where, you know what, not only can I, but damn it, I just did the hard thing. Like, how do you get to that point?
That's a good question. So usually, you know, my runners will follow their training plan, and when they get to a hard workout, like let's say they're doing 800 meter repeats, they look at that on their calendar and they're like, what? I can't do that. But then I'm like, you know what? Just try it. You can do it. You've got this. You've been training. This is well within your range. They do it. And then I get an email or a text later and they're like, oh my God, I just did this. And I'm like, I told you so. And then from there, you know, it's getting to the first hard workout. From there, once they accomplish it, they're like, this is awesome, I can do this. Mm-hmm. And then they it's not fun. I mean, I like riding 800 meter repeats, but I know not everybody does. So it's not fun per se, but at the end of it, they're like, this is awesome. And then they can keep doing it. So it's getting to the first workout where I have to reassure them. And I say, this is well within your range. You've been training. You can do this. Then they go out and do it and they prove to themselves that they can do hard things. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of carries over into the rest of training and hopefully race day.
Right. And again, hearkening back to earlier, it's almost like that chunking bit of the marathon of like, yeah, I stopped to walk now, but like I've done 7 miles before, I can do 7 miles again. It's just right. It's just that reminder that like, all right, so I did this one hard thing.
Yeah.
Maybe I can do the next one as well. And it makes it a bit more manageable than feeling like you have to bite off the whole chunk all at once.
Right. Yeah. So like 26.2 miles is really far. Mm-hmm. So when you like look at that on paper or even drive it in a car, you're like, there is no way I can do this. Even I'm training for my fifth marathon. So I even still think that like, there's no way I can run 26.2 miles, but you know, you can, you train for it. So you've run 18 miles, you've run 19 miles, you can run 7 more miles. Mm-hmm. Like it's not that far in the grand scheme of the race, right?
Yeah, that's definitely true. And you know, when you stop and think about it, like how many miles have you put in leading up to this race? And granted, you probably didn't do too many 26.2 plus mile training runs.
That's
but,
true.
You know, like you've probably had weeks where you've done more than that, you know? So there's, you know, there's things you can draw on. There's hard workouts that you've done where, you've done hard things. You struggled through the end of a long run, whatever. Like, there's things you can draw on if you're willing to, if you're able to in the moment, which can be difficult. Maybe it's more able than willing. But focus your mind on what have I done before, and I can probably do that again if I really focus and just do it.
Well, the other thing that helps, I know for example, when it gets hard, like in the later miles of a marathon, is turning on like really crazy pump you up music. Mm. You know, like I can run without music for quite some time, but if I'm struggling and I turn on some like Eminem or something, you know, it pumps me up and I can run for miles.
Right.
So like even just cues like that can help.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've talked to, I think, our mutual friend, Susie Lemmer. I've had that conversation with her a couple of times, where it's you know, saving that kind of ace in the hole or ace up your sleeve, whatever you want to call it, until you need it, as opposed to starting out with the music from the beginning. And then when you, you know, even if you have a separate playlist, but when you try to turn to it 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours later to get you that boost, it's not as much. So that's another good reminder that was totally unplanned to get to it. But yeah, saving that something of a boost, if it's music, if it's a certain snack or fuel or whatever it is,
saving
something to when you really need it. And
it really works too.
Yeah.
Cause like when you're, if for fuel, for example, if you're like, for me, I train with Pro Bar Bolt, which are like honey stinger chews kind of, I'll, you know, snack on those for a while, but then later when I'm tired and cranky and bored of running, I'll whip out my Paydays and I'm like, ooh, these are delicious. Great treat.
Right.
And it totally helps.
Yeah. I've, you know what, I'm glad you bring that up, because I've heard of that idea specifically with the Payday before, because it's the perfect, it doesn't
so
melt.
Good.
It's not chocolatey, all that kind of thing. You get the salty, you get the sweet, all of the things. And it kind of slipped my mind, but I might need to grab a couple little, fun sizers for the next time I've got a race that I want that little extra boost for, because they're
delicious.
Yeah, definitely. And let's shift from Payday candy bars into maybe a little bit less running, although running is still going to probably be part of the equation, but the switch from candy bar to kind of healthy living and the idea, like I said in the intro, and like it's all over your about page and things like that, are just kind of healthy lifestyle and healthy living and things like that. And like I mentioned also, you know, you got the personal training stuff, you do the coaching, you do in-person, you do online. Maybe this is a leading question, because mm-hmm. I think I know where you're going to go with this, but who knows? You ask questions and adjust as you go. But maybe not so often, but at least on social media, you see some of these things where it's like, I run so that I can do XYZ. So I can drink all the beer or all the wine or eat all the pizza or eat all the ice cream or all of these things that maybe don't quite fall into that, you know, mm-hmm. okay in moderation mm-hmm. type of thing. But, you know, it can be a little bit too much, can be a lot too much. Where do you kind of fit into that life, that scale, I guess, of balancing? It's okay to have something of a treat or something like that, or reward yourself once in a while. But, you know, ultimately, if you want to succeed in your running goals, like it can't just be all about just the time when you're on your feet training and running. There has to be the other sides of healthy living that go into that. So how do you kind of like, what's your philosophy or what's your take, or how do you work with your clients and your athletes to help them maybe address some of the other areas of their life that could maybe be improved a little bit, whether it's diet, whether it's strength training, whether it's flexibility, whether it's sleeping better, sleeping more, all of those kind of healthy living things. How do you bring that discussion and you know, try to improve those to help improve the running as well?
So to to answer that. Let's see. Where should I begin? It depends on the client's goals, especially because I don't, you know, I don't want to alienate my clients. I want them, they're adults. They can make their own decisions. So it's tough. It depends. I guess the answer to that is it depends on what the client is willing to do. Right. You know, I present the information, you know, don't eat refined sugars, get 8 hours of sleep, drink water instead of Coke or whatever your choices are. And so they know, you know, what the best option is. Now, whether they do it is a different story.
Right, right.
You know, so it depends, I guess, you know, what they're willing to do. Now, other clients, you can tell them exactly that and they'll do exactly that. Mm-hmm. And they see great gains.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like you said, it's one of those things that we're almost, you know, all you can do, whether you're the coach or whatever, you're the advisor, the friend, all you can do is present the information, and you know,
right.
It's up to the person if they're going to take all of it or half of it or none of it. And, uh-huh. and you know, I think that a lot of times in my personal belief, and you can rebuke me if you believe otherwise, but you know, a lot of that I call it the little things, that little thing stuff is every bit as important as the actual running stuff towards your running goals. And so it's, you know, it's kind of frustrating to me, and it's frustrating to me personally because I don't always follow my own guidelines as much as I should have, because I'm human and sometimes I know better, but you know, I'm a little bit too lazy to foam roll or to stretch or to mix the yoga in like I know I should.
Foam rolling is such a thing. It takes forever and it hurts.
Yes, yes. But you know, you can do things that hurt. You can do painful things, you know?
Who knew
your words were going to come back to haunt you like that?
But, right?
but yes.
But to your point, like, I know I should foam roll too. Mm-hmm. Do I always do it? No.
No.
Do I get injured? Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah. And if you had foam rolled, would you have prevented it? Quite possibly. So
yeah, possibly.
Yeah. So it's one of those things of finding the right balance and you know, just continue to, I think, at least again for me, continue to present the information and hope that eventually it sinks in. And sometimes that's why, again, I like having other coaches on the show, because you might say the same thing that I've always said, but you say it just a little bit differently and it resonates with somebody. And hopefully that's the little nudge that individual needed to avoid that next IT band issue because they started foam rolling more or whatever the case might be.
You know what? Speaking of foam rolling. So I'm a runner. I know I should foam roll, but I didn't really take it seriously until I did my training for my CPT mm-hmm. certification. Once I did that and I knew the science behind it and how to do it properly, then I started foam rolling a lot more. So I found that interesting for myself. So I'm hoping that I can, you know, tell my clients or, you know, your listeners or whoever, I've actually done a couple of blog posts about it, but you know, I hope that I can relay that kind of information, because with me, I knew I should foam roll. And I kind of knew how, but once I actually read about it and learned about it and knew the science behind it, it made a world of difference.
Well, again, with that kind of the thought I just shared about me saying, us saying the same things, but maybe saying a little bit differently. Can we go into that just a little bit? What are some of those, you know, the science behind it from your words instead of mine? Cause they've heard mine a dozen times, like I said, you know, what is some of the science behind it and what are some of the ways to do it more effectively, more efficiently, maybe than what, you know, you just think, you know, again, I say foam roll. I think everybody kind of knows what to do, but I realize that's not always the case. So
let's break that down a bit.
Yeah.
So when you're foam rolling, you're sending signals to your body to release the adhesions in the muscles, but most people don't do it long enough. Mm. And I found that to be true for myself. So when I was taught how to foam roll back in, it was 2015 when I was injured, and I went to this chiropractor. He was super nice, really knowledgeable, and he showed me how to foam roll, and he was like showing me to do it on my quad because it was my IT band that was injured. Mm-hmm. He was like, do not roll directly on the IT band. You know, you do it just on your quad, just next to it, and go slowly. And he showed me how to do it. And I was like, okay. So I did it and I went slowly. But, and that's what I did from, you know, 2015 until honestly, until March of this year. So it's been 3 years now. Mm-hmm. And when I learned about it, I took CBT training with National Academy of Sports Medicine, and they did like a whole big section of it. So basically, you have to do it for 30 seconds or longer. And so by slow, that means like really slow. So each spot that you get like that is kind of tender or hurts, you have to sit on it for 30 mm-hmm. seconds or longer for it to release like in your brain.
Right. Yeah. I wanted to throw that in there, that it's not 30 seconds for the whole muscle. It's 30 seconds right. on one spot.
Whatever,
and it's the most painful spots are the ones yes. that need it the most. So it's a dichotomy, but that's what's necessary.
Right. So foam rolling could take like an hour, really. Mm-hmm. Maybe even longer, I guess, depending on how banged up you are. But
and how much of a sucker for pain you are to get every sore spot that one day, as opposed to maybe focus in one area today, right. one area the next time.
But yeah, like I was doing it wrong, and I'm sure all of my friends are doing it wrong. And I just, last week I had a client come over so I could show her how to do it correctly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's crazy. Like you just assume people know how to foam roll.
Right.
And they don't. And it didn't resonate with me until I learned about it in a book. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and sometimes that's what it takes, is kind of understanding, like you said, the a bit of the science, the adhesions, like, I just thought right. you were supposed to do it because it was what you were supposed to do, but you don't necessarily know why. So then it's like, well, why am I going to put myself through this? Because it's not a whole lot of fun. It hurts. Like, I'll just do it, you know, do the quick
yeah.
5 seconds on my calves, 5 seconds on my hamstrings, and I'll be, you know, I'll call it a day.
Yeah.
Realistically, you didn't do much in those 10 seconds. You really didn't do anything. But now that you know why, it's a bit, not easier, but you're more willing to put yourself through it to get the desired results.
Exactly.
So shifting gears a little bit, again, not too far outside of the scope, but just a little something different as we're kind of getting close to wrapping things up today, Rachel. The blog, the website, I mean, knowing what it takes to put a website together and consistently creating content and things like that. I mean, you got a wealth of information, years worth of information on the blog. When did writing the blog and keeping up with that, when did that kind of come on the radar? Is that something that started also around the same time as coaching, or were you doing that beforehand, or how did that get started? No.
I started the blog when my son was 6 months old, and I started it because I had no friends and I had nothing to do. So I was like, ooh, I'll start typing, because I've always liked writing. So it gave me something to do. So if you go back, like, it's kind of embarrassing, but if you go back to like my early blog posts, it's just like nonsensical rambling about being a stay-at-home mom. And like, there are times that I was like super depressed because Cleveland is overcast more than half the year. So, you know, I'd be like, I'm looking at my window and it's foggy and gray. So that's when my blogging actually started. The real blogging with like the information and that kind of stuff, that started before I was a coach, but then was really refined like in the years since.
Gotcha. I'm just thinking about the gray. I grew up in Northern Michigan on the coast of Lake Michigan. So I totally understand the lack of sunshine from like, right? People don't understand. Like, people think you're joking when you say, you know, from about the 10th of November until about the 15th of March, you might, if in a good year, literally see the sun 10 times like that.
Oh, yeah,
that would be a great 5 month window of having the sun shine 10 times. And it just, people that, and I live in Florida now. So, and people down here are just like, no, like,
lucky.
You don't get, like, that's not really right. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly.
Oh, no, it's real.
Cleveland's the same. Yeah. That cloudy, hazy yuck in the winter time. Yeah.
Were you up north during the polar vortices that year?
I've been down here basically since 2000, but I grew up, and raised in Northern Michigan. So I put in my 18 years, and when it was time to go to college, I got the heck out. Yeah. I flew south, like the birds, but anyway, so the blog started, and then, like you said, it shifts and changes and gets focused more on kind of the running side of things now, coaching, good information, things like that. Does it ever feel like a job to keep up the blog, or is it one of those things that you enjoy it so much that it's not a problem to put a post out when you need to put a post out and things like that?
So that's a tricky question, because for a long time I was blogging Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like a job, but I really, really enjoyed it. And then as my responsibilities kind of shifted to more coaching and training and coaching this kids running program that I do, it became a little bit of a chore. So now I only blog on Wednesdays and Fridays for now. I think I'll probably pick up another day over the winter when my schedule is a little less crazy. But it's still fun. I wish I had more time to research more stuff because I used to put out some pretty quality pieces mm-hmm. and it took a long time, but I really enjoyed it. So it was, you know, a labor of love, I guess.
Right.
I wish that I had more time to do that now. I'm hoping to get back into that over the winter. I feel like my posts over the summer haven't been that great, but, you know, it happens. So.
Well, and you know, I mean, you can draw all the parallels you want to running, and you know, sometimes the runs are real easy and they're high quality, and sometimes you're kind of, you know,
yeah.
I don't want to say going through the motions, but it's more of a maintenance. It's more of something that you're holding on to the fitness that you've built, and when life allows you to get back to training a little more seriously, you do, and maybe that's just kind of the season that the blog has been in for a little while.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Thank you.
Yeah, and you mentioned the kids program. I definitely want to touch on that before we wrap up as well. I believe if my notes are correct, that Kids Run the Nation is the title of it. What's that program all about? And is it a big thing, just local? Where does that fit into the scale?
So Kids Run the Nation is an RRCA program, and it's for coaches and schools to bring like a really generalized education and running program to elementary school kids. There are cities where it's like huge and they've got, you know, hundreds of runners. Mm-hmm. Right now, I think that I'm the only one in the Cleveland area that's doing the Kids Run the Nation program. I only have this is my third go with it. We did last fall and then spring and then this fall so far. And I'm still kind of fine tuning it. I'm doing it through one school district right now, but I'm really hoping to find like a more centralized location so I can get more school districts. The problem is that it's after school and all the schools let out at different times mm-hmm. in this area.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I want to get a ton of kids, but I have to find a good spot and I have to find like the issue is I need like a track and an indoor location in case it's really bad weather.
Right.
So it's been kind of, a challenge, I guess. It's been really fun and I love it. So that's why I want to continue to grow it. But right now we have 15 kids this session and we have a ton of kindergartners, which is amazing because that means they're going to continue with it because we've got kids that started last fall that are still with us. And it's amazing to see how these kids have grown. Like I remember one of the first sessions last fall, we had this one kid who's like, I don't know if he's got ADD or whatever, but he's just such a spaz and he's adorable mm-hmm. and he's super into it. And one of the first sessions, he wouldn't listen to anything at all. But now this time we were kind of going over like what we learned last time. And he taught like all the kids what they had learned. And I was like, oh my God, look at you.
Oh, that's awesome. Gotta be really cool. Yeah. To see kind of that growth and evolution and hopefully, yeah. As this continues to take up footing and you get more, like you said, more kids involved, you find a better, maybe a more convenient location or whatever, work out all those logistical things.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll be,
it was super awesome.
Yeah. That's really, really cool.
But yeah, it's really fun.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, certainly wish you, nothing but the best with that. And especially, you know, I mean, we just kind of talked about weather. What do you do in the wintertime? Is that what the indoor location is ideally for?
Yeah. So I'm trying to mimic like cross country in the fall and track in the spring. So we take a break in the winter. Mm. I actually found an indoor location. So I might do like a smaller workshop in the winter for the kids. But the inclement weather is just because, you know, it's so volatile right. in the spring and the fall in Cleveland. We've got 90 degree days and then we've got 20 degree days mm-hmm. depending on the season. And there could be a thunderstorm or a hailstorm, or it could be beautiful. So it's just, you know, if it's raining and there's thunder and lightning, we're not allowed to be outside right. by the state. So we have to find an indoor spot. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just all of those logistics. So hopefully all that stuff continues to come together and continues to be something that you enjoy doing.
I think it will. Yeah. It's been really fun.
Awesome. Awesome. And like you said, it's national. So if people that are listening and there's not a program like that in their area, or maybe there is and they want to be involved with it, just is it through the, like you said, RRCA? So just go through the RRCA website to find more information?
Yeah. Go to, I think it's rrca.org / Kids Run the Nation or something like that. But yeah, it's on there.
Awesome. So Rachel, as we're wrapping up today, I like to end with what I call a philosophical question, which for some can sound a little bit scary, but it's really nothing much more difficult than like the introductory question, except I don't always ask the same one. So it just kind of goes with the flow, but it's open-ended. You can answer it short answer, long answer, medium answer, whatever works for you. At this point in your running career, now that you've gone on to start coaching and obviously working with kids and adults and all of the things and your own training and things like that you're going for. Why do you do it? Why do you still participate in this crazy sport of running? Why do you, if you had to try to nail it down, what's your reason for running?
My personal reason for running is because I like challenging myself and I like being able to see how far or how fast or how much. I don't like to overdo it, so I should back up and say maybe not how much. I know my own limits. If I have a pain that I know I shouldn't run through, I stop. Mm-hmm. I don't push it like that. In terms of coaching and helping others, I really like seeing other people achieve their goals. And in terms of continuing my education, I really like learning about like the human body and healthy food and our environment and stuff like that. So I continue to do what I do because I like to do all of those things, and running and fitness kind of combines all of that at once.
Totally agree. And as per usual, that's a great place to wrap it up and not let me get in the way by trying to add to it, because it was perfect just the way it was. So once again, guys, runningonhappy.com is the website. Lots of great information there. So if you're looking for a resource or questions or things like that, head over to runningonhappy.com and you can probably find it. Facebook, Running Unhappy, Instagram, Twitter, running_unhappy. And once again, disruns.com/632 is the link to the show notes to take you back. Everything will be linked up there as well. So, Rachel, thanks again for taking the time today. Glad to finally be able to chat a little bit and connect. I think I said at the beginning, I feel like we've kind of been in, passed through each other's atmospheres, at least, if not directly, a little bit of chatting online and whatnot. But
glad
to finally be able to connect, and certainly wish you nothing but the best going forward. And good luck with that Cleveland winter this year. If you need a break, come on down to Florida. We'll get a few actual miles in together. But
yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. Hope that you enjoyed this conversation between Rachel and myself. And as always, I'd be curious to know what stood out to you from today's episode. What was something that we talked about that really, really sunk in, that really hit home with you and where you are as a runner and as a human being at this moment in time? For me, it was Rachel's reminder or a bit of advice, coaching tip that she offered that you can do hard things. And, I don't know about you, but I know for me, sometimes I look at some of the goals I have, specifically the goal of Boston, which has just gotten harder now to get into Boston with the new qualifying times, and think that, God, like, I mean, I don't second guess that I can do it, but I look at the numbers and look at where I am and go, God, it's going to be a monumental task for me to get to the point where I'm legitimately able to qualify for Boston. In a honest moment, maybe there's a little bit of doubt in there going, I don't know if I can do it. It might be too much. It might be too hard. And when Rachel said that you can do hard things, that we all can do hard things, it really sunk into me that, there was a time when I didn't think I could run a marathon, when I didn't think that I could run a half marathon, when realistically I couldn't run a marathon. I really couldn't run a half marathon. And look at where I am now. Certainly still not the fastest, not setting any speed records, but I can go out and knock out 26.2 and it's not that big of a deal. I can live to walk the next day. Same thing with a 50K. I've done that before. We'll be doing that again soon. And it doesn't scare me anymore. It's difficult. It's a challenge, but it doesn't seem as impossible as it did 3, 4, 5 years ago. And when Rachel said, once again, that you can do hard things, it just made me think that, like, you know, qualifying for Boston for me, hard, really hard. But I've done hard things before. I can do hard things in the future as long as I keep working, as long as I keep working intelligently, making good choices, continuing to see steady progress, consistent progress over the months and over the years. There's going to come a point when all of a sudden qualifying for Boston isn't going to seem impossible anymore. It's going to seem realistic, and then it's going to happen. And then I'll be able to say, well, hell yes, I've done it. It was hard. It took a lot of work. Certainly wasn't easy, but it was worth it. And whatever that is for you, whether that's Boston, whether that's qualifying for the Olympic trials, whether that's running your first marathon, whether that's running a whole entire 5K without having to do a walk break, whatever your big goals are, whatever seems to you to be like, this might be something that's impossible. Just remember, you can do hard things. You can do hard things. That's certainly going to be the takeaway from me for this episode. I got a feeling it might be the takeaway for some of you, but others, maybe there's something else that stood out from this episode. In any event, we'd love to know what it is. What stood out to you from this episode? What was your takeaway? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email. DizRuns@gmail.com. And of course, show notes, DizRuns.com/632. You can leave your comments and feedbacks and takeaways and all the other things there. DizRuns.com/632. Once again, before we wrap up today, just want to thank Knucklelights again for their continued support. Knucklelights.com is the website. Check them out. If you order a pair, make sure you let them know that you heard about it from me. It gives me a little bit of credit in their eyes and keeps them, you know, wanting to continue along because they know that their sponsor dollars are working and leading to new people trying their product. And I have a strong feeling that if you try it, you're not going to be disappointed because Lord knows I haven't been. They are my go-to, both for running and for other areas of life as well. I use my Knucklelights on a regular basis because they're so easy to use and they work very, very well. So knucklelights.com is the website. And with that, go ahead and put a bow on this thing for today, shall we? Thank you guys for listening. Hope that you enjoyed this one. If you did, go ahead and share it across the platforms or places where other people might see it that would be interested in it. And until next time, please be well. Take good care. Thank you guys so much for listening. And we'll talk again soon, all right? Take care, guys.